Katie tried. I was halfway crucified. I was on the other side of no tomorrow. You walked in and my life began again. Just when I'd spent the last piaster I could borrow. All night long, we would sing that stupid song. And every word we sang I knew was true. Are you with me, Dr. Wu? Are you really just a shadow?
The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
When Nicole Sandler sits down to do her show, she's the producer, booking the guests, pulling the audio, planning the show, the engineer, running the controls, troubleshooting any problems, playing the sounds, calling the guests, and she's the webmaster, writing the blog, posting the podcast, maintaining the website, not to mention the host, interviewing the guests, explaining the issues, giving opinions, and calling out the bad guys. And then you get the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com.
We're here. Welcome to a Thursday. I am Nicole Sandler here at NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network, and what a day it is. You know, this morning I had an appointment. When you're, even though I am, knock on wood laminate, cancer-free, I still have a lot of tests and stuff to go through. And one of the places where lung cancer likes to spread is the brain. So when we first did a brain MRI, we found what the doctors believe is a meningioma, which is a small, usually benign tumor, you know, in the brain. But because I had lung cancer, they can't be 100% certain that it's a meningioma. So they are following it. So I had the first one right after the diagnosis almost a year ago. and then a second one about 6 months ago. And there wasn't much of a change, but they thought they detected a slight change. So I had to have another one, and that was this morning. So there I am at the Sylvester Cancer Center. It's part of the University of Miami, which is who's giving me my treatment. My appointment was for 11 o'clock this morning. I had to be there at 10:30, you know, to do paperwork. And because they want you there early, of course, they were running late today. And in the waiting room, they don't have a television, you know, with the news on or anything. They have, I don't even ask what they were showing. They had some blender thing, people putting a Coke can and ice and stuff in a to show that you can make a smoothie out of this Coke can. I don't know. I guess they were trying to sell the blender. And inane stuff like that, ostensibly health tips, but obviously not really. Anyway, so there I am trying to see what's going on my iPad and keeping up to date and reading articles. And the Republican Senate conference went in for a meeting at 9:30 this morning. I expected they would be emerging somewhere around 10:30 and we'd start getting some inklings of what is in this bill. Well, we know what it's called now. The new version of Trump Care is officially called the Better Care Reconciliation Act of 2017. Now, it's reconciliation because they are trying to do it through budget reconciliation so that it only needs 51 votes to pass. Because any other type of bill that is not budget-centric, to not fully explain it correctly, but give the gist of it, it would take 60 votes because the Democrats would be able to filibuster it. Not to say they wouldn't change the filibuster rules the first time they're given the chance on a major piece of legislation, but right now they're going to try to do this through reconciliation. The BCRA, BRCA, isn't that a gene? Like a breast cancer gene or something? Anyway, no, there's no easy acronym there. So we'll call it Trump Care. Yes, because that's what it is. And it's ugly. It's not quite, you know, what the president asked for, it not to be as mean as the House bill that he celebrated, by the way, with a big beer party in the Rose Garden. Remember that? And then he goes ahead and calls it mean. So to any Republicans who think that this president is going to have your back if you vote for this piece of shit, think again. Just look at his track record. But anyway, so I've been reading. So I was tied up. I didn't get home until, you know, maybe 90 minutes ago from this appointment that was supposed to be at 9 o'clock this morning. I'll get the results from the brain MRI on Tuesday of next week. But all I could think while I was sitting in that waiting room was, well, if this GOP wealth care bill goes through, because that's what it is, you know, it's they're calling it the repeal and replacement of the Affordable Care Act, but what it is a major tax break once again for the wealthiest people in this country, at the expense of those of us, you know, who need health care, which is everybody. Everybody on this planet at some point in their lives will need health care. Now, hopefully, you know, you go through most of your years without needing any major medical care. But it's going to be there at some point, because at some point we're all going to die. Most of us get sick and die. Some of us, I guess, are more fortunate where, you know, you just go to sleep one night and don't wake up, and maybe you don't have to suffer any horrific illnesses. If I had to guess, I'd say that's a very small percentage of the world's population who are lucky enough to go in that way. No, most of us are going to get sick at some point in our lives. Most of us are going to have to care for an ailing family member. You know, one of the worst things about this bill is that it completely eviscerates Medicaid, and they don't want you to know that. It's really important. They don't want you to know that because, frankly, a lot of Donald Trump's supporters, a lot of Republican voters are on Medicaid. You know, they were so told that Obamacare was so horrible And frankly, part of the blame for that rests with the Democrats for not doing a good enough job educating people on how to navigate the Affordable Care Act and the exchanges. But, you know, most of the blame, frankly, goes to the Republicans for vilifying a program that, you know, for the most part, was there to make things better. What this bill will do is bring us back to where we were before and then some. Let me share with you a couple of good synopses that I read. One was from Mother Jones. And again, everybody's just reading the bill, and I will post a link to the full text on the blog today after the show at NicoleSandler.com so you can read it for yourself. I have a hard time getting through legalese like that. I did with the Affordable Care Act. I participated in with a group called Read the Bill, and we recorded it. And reading through, you know, Section 1, Part C, Section 3D, and all the legalese, it's written so that the layperson can't easily understand it. So I like to read analyses of them and figure out what's in it that way. Here's what Mother Jones wrote shortly after the bill was released. After weeks of behind-the-scenes negotiations, Senate Republicans released their plan to repeal and replace Obamacare on Thursday. The bill was released without any public hearings, drafted by a small, secret, all-male panel of Republicans. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has said he aims to put the bill up for a vote next week, excuse me, before senators head home for the 4th of July. The bill takes 25 pages to get to perhaps its most significant effect, a massive tax cut, with the most of the benefits going to the wealthiest Americans. Like the health care bill that passed the House last month, the Senate's legislation ditches all of Obamacare's taxes and pays for that move by slashing spending on Medicaid. Both Obamacare's expansion of Medicaid and general Medicaid funding. The bill puts a general cap on how much money the federal government will give states under Medicaid, ending the program's open-ended promise to fund the health needs of poor people. In the long run, that will result in a massive reduction in Medicaid spending. The bill also grants states the option of adding a work requirement to their Medicaid programs. By the way, if you have elderly parents or grandparents in nursing homes, chances are those bills are being covered under Medicaid. I can't even think of how many elderly people will be thrown out of nursing home facilities because of the end of Medicaid. Oh, here's another one. The measure would also revoke federal funding from Planned Parenthood. Before the bill was released, Mother Jones tells us it was unclear whether the Senate would adopt the House's provision to repeal all federal Medicaid spending on the women's health provider. Two Republican senators, Lisa Murkowski of Alaska and Susan Collins of Maine, had indicated that cutting funds to Planned Parenthood might, let me say that again, might prevent them from voting for the bill. Let me bring to you one more time the magic words of Dick Durbin, number two in the Democratic caucus in the Senate.
At the end of the day, what can the Democrats really do to affect the outcome of this bill? The Republicans are obviously trying to pass it through reconciliation without a single Democratic vote. So for all of the eloquent speeches and points being made about secrecy, what can you guys actually do to either prevent this from being repealed and replaced or to change the nature of the final bill?
Steve, the magic number's three.
Three
Republican senators can stop what looks like an effort to push through and steamroll a bill that could change health care all across America, a bill that literally has not been read or seen by the members of the United States Senate.
Well, this was
if
2 days
Republican
ago.
Republican senators stand up and say this is the wrong way to pass legislation. It should be done on a more open basis, as we did with the passage of the Affordable Care Act. Then we can stop it.
So since we all love Schoolhouse Rock...
Is a magic number.
Number three.
Yes, it is. It's a magic number. Somewhere in the ancient mystic trinity, you get three as a magic number.
All right, I'm not going to play the whole thing. But three is the magic number. There are 52 Republican senators in the caucus. They need 51 to pass. So they could conceivably lose two and have Mike Pence be the, you know, the tiebreaker. But if they lose three, it's done. Now, this happened right after the senators came out of their all-Republican Senate meeting. Casey Hunt on NBC cornered Rand Paul, who said this.
My concern at this point, from what I've been able to see so far, is it looks like we're keeping Obamacare, not repealing it.
So are you a no then?
We're going to have a statement in about an hour.
And is that going to be with you and others? Do you think that's going to be enough to kill this bill?
We'll see in about an hour.
Well, so the hour came and passed, and it was Rand Paul and three others, Ted Cruz, Ron Johnson, and Mike Lee joined Rand Paul to say that they are, quote, not ready to support the Senate Republicans' Obamacare repeal plan. So here they said in a statement that they remain open to voting for it after further negotiations and obtaining more information, but that, quote, it does not appear this draft as written will accomplish the most important promise that we made to Americans, to repeal Obamacare and lower their health care costs. I know they want to repeal Obamacare because Obama, you know, the black guy in the White House, they just couldn't have it. Lower costs to Americans. For all the times they say that, I see nothing in anything they've done or said, frankly, other than paying lip service to it, that shows that that's what they want to do. Because really killing off Medicaid will not lower anyone's health care costs. There is a provision that there's more, there's so much more. And in fact, you know, if you want to call in, I'll open up the phone lines for just a couple of minutes. We've got Digby coming up in a little while, but if you want to call in, the number is 954-889-6410, or you can Skype in to Nicole Sandler. Once Digby's on, though, I'm not going to answer the phone, so I'll let you know that right off the bat. So if you want in, now's the time to do it. The Washington Post has a ton of stuff. They have, let me see if I can pull up. You know, what they're saying is a couple of things. They're saying that it will provide funding in 2018 and 2019 for extra Obamacare subsidies to insurers to cover, to sort of stabilize the marketplace. Well, the marketplace is only unstable because Donald Trump and the Republicans have been talking about it failing because they've been sabotaging it. If there's no stability there, this falls directly at the feet of the Republicans who have been doing everything in their power to convince you that it's not working. That's what it is. If they had gotten behind it and said, you know what, we are going to all work together to fortify the marketplace, to make sure it works, maybe give another option of a public option so that those of us who would like to buy into Medicare could do so at a 2% overhead instead of a 20% overhead, that could help fortify these markets. And, you know, the other thing is there's something called Medicare Advantage. I was a little unsure of how it worked until my husband went on Medicare last month. And basically, Medicare Advantage is Medicare, but administered by the for-profit health insurers. And it's cheaper than buying the regular Medicare subsidy, believe it or not. I think it's just easier for these for-profit insurance companies to do it. And they're happy to take the 2 or 3% overhead. They'll still make money doing it that way because they've got all the other elements in place. This would make so much sense, but they don't want to hear about it. In fact, some miscreant on the right referred to Bernie Sanders as a violent Marxist today. Why? Because he's a proponent of Medicare for all? I just don't get it at all. Anyway, let's see. So you have Rand Paul, Ted Cruz, Mike Lee, Ron Johnson, who are saying, well, we don't like this because it doesn't go far enough. They want to do away with the Medicaid expansion completely, and they wanted to completely overturn the Affordable Care Act. Well, actually, from what I'm able to understand of this bill, and I admit I'm a little shaky on it because I've only been able to read bits and pieces in the last couple of hours, but it seems like they want to keep the marketplace. intact. They want to keep the exchange running. They're going to keep offering subsidies, at least for the next couple of years. They're going to still have Medicaid for the next, I think, 6 or 7 years. It'll just be faded out more slowly. And in the long run, more, what's the word I'm looking for? More harmfully. Yes, it will hurt the poor more than the House version would have, if that one had gone through. Here, the idea, aides and lobbyists say, is to provide a softer landing for people at lower ends of the income spectrum than under the House bill. I guess that's Donald Trump's saying he doesn't want it to be so mean. He wants it to have more heart. Yes, because you got to have heart. The whole thing is so disconcerting. Then I love this one. McConnell, this is from the Washington Post. McConnell is also offering moderates an approach to Medicaid he hopes will be more politically palatable to them. And by moderates, we're talking Susan Collins, Lisa Murkowski, maybe Dean Heller of Nevada, Jeff Flake of Arizona, Rob Portman of Ohio, Shelley Moore Capito, I think is how you say her name, in West Virginia, and Cory Gardner of Colorado. Those are also some senators we hear maybe on the fence, because it's too, again, harmful to people. It's going to hurt too many people, too many of their constituents. And, oh, my God, what they really care about, it might cost them their jobs. So the Washington Post writes, it's true. The draft proposes even deeper cuts to Medicaid than the House version by tying federal spending to a slower growth index. But here's the thing. That wouldn't kick in for another 7 years, well past moderate senators' next reelection battles. That's all they care about. And it doesn't fully end the Affordable Care Act's Medicaid expansion until 5 years from now, gradually easing down the federal payments over 3 years, starting in 2021. Now, big question, big for me and pretty much anybody listening, is pre-existing conditions. And I'm at a loss here, because I've read competing theories on this. This Washington Post piece says the Senate bill also retains the Affordable Care Act's protections for patients with pre-existing conditions. They write it eliminates the House bill's pathway for states to lift a ban on insurers from charging people with serious medical conditions higher premiums, which would have been another political hotbed for moderates. It does expand the use of certain 1332 waivers to give states more flexibility, a provision that conservatives like Ted Cruz wanted. But the Washington Post says those waivers don't open the door to ducking the pre-existing protections. However, other accounts that I've read say the opposite, that it does give states the right to basically opt out of covering pre-existing conditions. It puts it all back on the states. So if you live in a cruel state like Florida, I'm screwed. And what are pre-existing conditions? Everything. If you're a woman and you've ever given birth, that's a pre-existing condition. If you were born with a congenital heart defect, that's a pre-existing condition. Some insurers used to cancel policies of people once they got sick because they neglected to write down on their insurance application that as a teenager, they had acne, and they included acne as a pre-existing condition. Of course, if you're a cancer survivor, either, 9 months cancer-free like I am, or in the throes of it, well, then you're shit out of luck. And if a state, especially a state like Florida or so many others that I could mention here, if you, have cancer, they could say, well, pre-existing conditions are not covered, and you're going to have to find, and then they talk about the high-risk pools. Don't be fooled. A high risk pool is basically, yeah, you go over with those other sick people and we'll make a few dollars available to bring the cost down a little bit. It won't be anywhere near affordable unless you happen to be one of Trump's spawn. And I don't think anybody listening is one of them. So the best we can hope is that, Rand Paul, Ted Cruz, Mike Lee, and Ron Johnson, or any three of them, say, we can't go for this. Or that Mitch McConnell negotiates with them to the point where they can go for it. The bill is made so much meaner that some of these moderates say, oh, no, Now you lost me. 3 is the magic number. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll check in with what's news that I rushed to put together once I got back. And so we've got a little bit of the healthcare stuff in there. And then we'll come back with the one, the only, Heather Digby Parton, who I'm sure, and she's been writing about everything, both on her blog and at salon.com. And it's just, you know, remember when, well, one thing that Donald Trump said that came true, a promise that he made during the campaign that has absolutely come true, as he said, your head will spin. My head is spinning. It just hasn't stopped. We'll be right back.
I read the news today.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Senate Republicans released a draft of their long-awaited Obamacare repeal and replace bill ahead of a vote expected next week. The measure includes deep cuts to Medicaid and huge tax cuts for the wealthy. It repeals billions of dollars in tax cuts that were used to raise money for the Affordable Care Act's coverage expansion and also abolishes the law's mandates to buy coverage. The tax credits under the Affordable Care Act to help people buy private coverage would be kept, but reshaped so that they're less generous and cost the government less money. Passage in the Senate is not a slam dunk, as both moderate and conservative Republicans have reservations. Donald Trump was in Cedar Rapids, Iowa Wednesday evening for a victory rally or 2020 campaign speech of the Trump Care bill, he said.
I think and I hope, can't guarantee anything, but I hope we're going to surprise you with a really good plan. You know, I've been talking about a plan with heart. I said, add some money to it. A plan with heart. But Obamacare is dead.
As usual, Trump went off on the media, accurately predicting one reaction to his speech.
I have to be a little careful because they'll say, he lied. Just have to be a little careful because they'll say, headline, Donald Trump lies to the people of Iowa. I don't want to.
MSNBC put together a fact-check montage of some of the claims he made in that speech.
When I'm signing for the XL pipeline and the Dakota, I said, by the way, who made the pipe? But I put a little clause, handwritten. It said, anybody builds a pipeline in the United States will use American steel and fabricate in America. No more taking it over on boats. 54 Muslim nations coming together. I said, for me to go, I'm only going, we had to negotiate, if you spend billions of dollars, billions, on having things manufactured in our country with our jobs and our workers for your country. And hundreds of billions of dollars were spent and given to American companies who are going to make American products and send those products over to the wealthy countries of the Middle East. I mean, hundreds of billions of dollars. Last week, a brand new coal mine just opened in the state of Pennsylvania, first time in decades. Decade. We've reversed it. But they built these studios. CNN. Whoop. Hey, the camera just went off. I can't imagine. It's covered live. The camera just went off. I can't imagine why. They love what we're doing. You see what we're doing. You see what we've already done. Home builders are starting to build again. The time has come for new immigration rules, which say that those seeking admission into our country must be able to support themselves financially and should not use welfare for a period of at least 5 years.
That's a 20-year-old law.
And we'll be putting in legislation to that effect very shortly. Now, the Paris Agreement, I could tell you stories, I could give you stats, I could go on all day. It's a catastrophe if we would have agreed. And they all say it's non-binding. Like hell, it's non-binding.
The president introduced some advisors and cabinet members who were present and seemed to claim that only the rich can save us.
We have the legendary Wall Street genius Wilbur Ross here. He's our Secretary of Commerce. We have Gary Cohn, who is the president of Goldman Sachs. In fact, somebody, he's the president of Goldman Sachs. He had to pay over $200 million in taxes to take the job, right? So somebody said, why did you appoint a rich person to be in charge of the economy? I said, no, it's true. And Wilbur's a very rich person in charge of commerce. I said, because that's the kind of thinking we want. I mean, you know, really, because they're representing the country. And I love all people, rich or poor. But in those particular positions, I just don't want a poor person. Does that make sense? Does that make sense? If you insist, I'll do it. But I like it better this way, right?
Back in Washington, D.C., former Secretary of Homeland Security Jay Johnson testified before the House Intelligence Committee.
In 2016, the Russian government, at the direction of Vladimir Putin himself, orchestrated cyber attacks on our nation for the purpose of influencing our election. That is a fact, plain and simple.
My question for you, sir, just to be abundantly clear, will the Russians be back?
I think we have to assume, for all the reasons that have been discussed here, that the Russians will be back and possibly other state actors and possibly other bad cyber actors.
Mr. Secretary, was our democracy attacked this past election?
Yes.
By who?
The Russian government.
And would you agree that the first step to solving a problem, have you heard of this quote or this idea, is to acknowledge that a problem exists?
Sure. Yes.
Why do you think that President Trump will not state that Russia meddled in our elections?
You'd have to ask him, sir.
And that's some of What's News right now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate the What's News reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider a donation. We are 100% listener funded, and we can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com/donate.
You're listening to the Nicole Sandler Show on Progressive Voices and NicoleSandler.com.
What's that, Leonardo? Who's Nicole Sandler's next guest? Why, it's Digby, of course. Who's Digby? Observe, Leonardo. That's Dig for Dig and B for B. Digby.
That is Heather Digby Parton, who blogs, of course, still on her own Hullabaloo blog. And you find her at salon.com as well. Hey, Digby.
Hi there, Nicole. How are you?
Oh, I'm, you know, as well as can be expected on a day like this. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm okay. I thought of you, though, this morning when we saw this monstrosity of a health care bill unveiled by the Senate. And you're one of the people I know who's going to be directly affected by this and are in the midst of a major health care challenge as we speak. And I just, you know, I can't imagine what you must be feeling today.
Oh, and I was at a hospital this morning because I had to have a brain MRI. And so I'm thinking, you know, this could be my last one. If they pass this, all bets are off. Who knows? Because my insurance is through the Affordable Care Act. Without it, you know, I'm a walking pre-existing condition. And, you know, and it's not me. I know I'm in the company of many millions of people who are in the same boat today. This is scary stuff. You, Digby, had a piece up at Salon just 2 days ago. You wrote, GOP sneak attack on healthcare nears a critical moment, and it's a total monstrosity. And today we know that for sure, don't we?
We sure do. And I mean, I think we all knew that if the Republicans got the Congress and had the White House, that it was they had promised to repeal and replace Obamacare. But I have to admit that somewhere, you know, deep down, I know who they are. I know how crazy they are. I know that they're actually kind of malevolent, evil people at this point. But I thought maybe they'd be smart, and what they do is just, you know, put on a big show and tweak a little bit around the edges, say they've repealed it but not really do it, and call it Trump Care and call it a day. You know what I mean?
Yep.
I mean, I just thought that it would be on some level they would understand that this was the only Republican plan that could possibly work, and that, you know, that they needed to save this because, you know, there's 25 million people's lives hanging in the balance. And so we know now, I mean, let's not kid ourselves any further. These people care about one thing only, and that is tax cuts. And this is their first chance since 1986 to get actual permanent tax cuts in there that don't fall under the deficit rules that they have, you know, created to try and keep Democrats from doing anything decent. So this is it. They've got this pile of money in Obamacare that was allocated, and it was hard to get it, hard to get those tax hikes in the Obamacare bill when they got it back in 2009. But they got it in there in order to finance, specifically to finance health care for people in America who couldn't afford it and who needed it. And that pile of money, they've been staring at it from the minute they appropriated it, looking for a way to get their grubby, greedy mitts on it so they could give it to their rich friends, and that's what they're going to do. And I don't think they even care if they lose their seats over it. This is their Moby Dick, their white whale. It's the thing they've been dreaming of doing since 1986, a big pile of cash that they can hand off to their rich people, rich friends, and donors. And that's all they care about. And the rest of this is just whatever it takes. And I think they feel that they can get away with it because they've created this alternate universe out there for right-wingers to what they hear in the media. I mean, it's astonishing. If you go out in the world where mostly what you see is just right-wing radio. I have family members who are like this. Radio and Fox, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And they basically are just not listening to anything but that. And if you watch that, they're being told, hey, everybody, this is terrific. It's going to be much better. This health care bill is really going to improve things. And, you know, Obamacare is terrible. Everybody's, you know, nobody has any good health care with it. Your lives are going to be better as a result of this. And, of course, if the opposite is true, but they have discovered that they can tell people, tell their voters, you can believe me or you can believe your lying eyes, and they will believe them over their lying eyes. They will believe them. So that's where we're at. And I don't know what will happen, but I do know that the pictures I'm seeing today of protesters in wheelchairs with, you know, colostomy bags being dragged out of a protest in front of Mitch McConnell's office, I just have a sneaking feeling that if those images actually wend their way through somehow, that there will be some people just a little bit appalled by what they're seeing. I'm hoping, anyway, that there's some sense of decency left in this country.
I hope so, too. But, yeah, so we saw them. I saw them. But I'm afraid that, you know, Fox and the right-wing blogs that the right-wing radio hosts will refer their listeners to will not show
Facebook,
those pictures.
Yeah.
Oh, Facebook. You got to get them on Facebook, although Facebook will probably flag them as, you know, inappropriate or something.
Well, you know, it's interesting, though. I mean, those pictures, there is one way that this might happen, and it could be a mistake, an overreach, in hubris on the part of the right wing. And let's face it, that is their weakness, right? They tend to get a little overconfident.
Mm-hmm.
And they might show those pictures thinking that they're making fun of liberals.
Ooh.
And those things might come out in a way, you know, couldn't you see Tucker Carlson showing that and making some snotty remark about it on his show, and maybe a few people would kind of gulp and go, ooh, you know? I mean, I don't know. Well, I know I'm grasping at straws, Nicole, but, you know, what else have we got?
Well, that's it.
Like this?
At this point, what else do we have? I mean, I've been urging my listeners to call your senators every day. I've been talking nice
Absolutely.
To the people in Marco Rubio's office, trying to make them feel sorry for me. You know, look, I was diagnosed with lung cancer last year. You know, without this, I can't get insurance. I know Marco Rubio doesn't want me to die. You know, although it's Marco Rubio, he doesn't give a shit if I die or not, as long as he gets, you know.
Well, he might care about one of his voters, though. You know, he doesn't know if you voted
That's
for
right.
him.
That's right. That's right. So, but this is all we can do. Now, we saw the four, Rand Paul, Ted Cruz, Mike Lee, and Ron Johnson, who came out today and said, basically, it's not heinous enough. It's not harmful enough. They wanted, we promised our constituents that we would repeal Obamacare. And what Rand Paul said is, oh, this is just a continuation of Obamacare. So because they would keep the exchanges going in some form, that's still Obamacare, and so it's not good enough for him. Do you think there's any hope that we'll have three senators who, for whatever reason, vote against it?
Well, I mean, there's always a hope, especially with the right wing. You know, they do have some crazies that will refuse to take yes for an answer. My guess is more, though, that this is a kabuki dance. There are a number of, you know, Mitch McConnell's very skilled at this sort of thing, and I think that what he's planned, this is my guess here, what he's planned to do is, I mean, well, let me take a step back. By having Rand Paul and Ted Cruz and Mike Lee and Rob Johnson all say, Ron Johnson, all get up and say, this bill is not harsh enough. It's just too good. Well, you know, it's just too nice to people. It just preserves too many rights. Well, that provides a service for the Republicans,
sure.
Right? It gives them something to say, well, you know, really, look, it isn't a mean bill. Look at, you know, these...
It's all got heart.
These, you know, right-wing senators hate it. It's not harsh, you know.
Right.
So that's part of it. And although I don't honestly know if Rand Paul, Ron Johnson, Mike Lee are playing that game. I mean, they tend to be pretty, I mean, say what you will about them, they tend to be pretty sincere in their wing nutia.
Yes.
Ted Cruz is another story. He, yeah. Of course, is someone who's, you know, he doesn't have a sincere bone in his body.
No.
But, you know, so there's that. And then what I think is going to happen is that the moderates are all saying today, well, you know, the so-called moderates, they're not. They're actually conservative, what we used to call, you know, far-right conservatives.
Right.
But now they're moderates. They're all saying, well, I got to look at the bill. I don't know what's in it. You know, I've got to study it, blah, blah, blah. And they're going to come out and they're going to say, well, gee, this doesn't do enough for the opioid crisis. This doesn't do enough for Medicaid in this way. It doesn't do this, that, or the other. And that's where Mitch McConnell is going to allow amendments. On the day of the vote, he's going to allow these people to offer amendments to make the bill better, which they can then run on and say, see what I did, you know, I made the bill better, I helped. And he's got it so that, you know, people like Portman, Murkowski, Collins, all these moderates, he's got lined out certain things that we were led to expect would be in this bill that aren't. And so I think that's the game he's playing, is that he's got these things out there and he's going to give them the chance to make the bill less harsh. Now, the question is, will that make those you know, hardcore right-wingers vote against the bill? Because they've only got two to spare, so
right.
They can't lose four. They can't lose three.
Right.
So who does that leave? I mean, my guess would be that Paul and Lee will vote against the bill. I think they really will. I don't know. Johnson is weird on this. I don't really understand him. I think he'll vote for it.
I think he will, too.
Which leaves an exciting vote
to Ted
Cruz. Oh, my God.
Oh,
and
my
I think
God.
We know what he'll do. So my guess is that the real battle royale is going to come in. You know, the conference is going to come up with some kind of a, you know, they don't have to do a lot of negotiating because these two bills are really pretty much the same. The Senate, everyone kept saying, oh, the Senate's going to come out with a much better bill and, you know, they're going to fix all these issues and blah, blah, blah. You know, they didn't do that and they're not going to do that. The bill is very close to what the House came up with. So when they come out of the conference, it's probably going to be a bill that looks pretty close to what we've seen already. So that's where the real battle is going to be. It's going to be on the House floor, and there are two places. Those moderates in the House, they have to face, all of them have to face election in 2018.
That's right.
And they have a much more direct contact with their voters, and this could be a much dicier problem for the moderates. And the crazy, you know, the right-wingers in the House are batshit, right?
Yeah, the Freedom Caucus.
Yeah, the Freedom Caucus. Mm-hmm. They might very well say, no, this just isn't good enough, and refuse to take yes for an answer. So I'm not going to bet that will happen because I kind of assume that this is their chance to get their hands on that money, and it's their chance to have a big, you know, quote, win, and that they're all willing to bet that by 2018 nobody will care and that they can get away with this. But if there's going to be – that's my currently what I think is the most likely outcome, that's where the battle will be. And if there's a chance to stop it, that's where it can be stopped. So for me, what I'm telling people is start calling your Republican representative right now, as well as your senators, and get them to understand that if this thing happens, you will move heaven and earth to make sure that they lose in 2018. Keep that pressure on those congressmen, because in the end, if this thing passes the Senate, and of course we'll know pretty soon. I mean, they're trying for a vote next week, and he'll probably get it. McConnell is. So at that point, then all eyes have to go on the House, because that's really, I think, the last backstop. And like I said, I don't have any great faith in any of those people that they will, you know, be decent human beings and not do this horrible thing. But if there's a chance, I think that's where it is.
And of course, the reason Mitch McConnell wants the vote next week is it's because it's before the 4th of July recess when everybody goes home. Now, a lot of the Republican House members and senators, by the way, are running away from town halls, but show up at their offices. I heard from a listener yesterday in Colorado where they were setting up, going to their senator's district office in 15-minute increments. So it's one after the next, after the next, after the next. Indivisible is a great group to join up with, because they were doing these Tuesday visits to Senate offices. I mean, now is really all hands on deck time, because this is our, you know, Hail Mary pass here, or however you say
it. Right. I mean, we don't have much, but we do have, you know, we don't have much institutional power to do anything. It's very, very, you know, they really do have it all. But there is grassroots power, and it still does have, you know, that is a potent thing. I think even these malevolent Republicans, you know, can be shamed on a certain level, at least enough of them. I mean, most of them can't, but, you know, maybe enough of them to stop it. And, you know, it has happened in the past. I mean, remember, I don't know if you remember this, Nicole, probably. You've been around as long as I have, almost as long as I have. You know, back in the 80s, they tried to pass legislation that would have taxed Medicare and Social Security recipients, you know, middle-class members of that group. And the reaction was so strong by grassroots people. They were chasing, you know, Dan Rostenkowski was the, I think he was the House Appropriations Committee chairman, very powerful Democrat from Illinois. And they chased him down the street. And this was elderly people, you know. Wow. I mean, we're talking walkers and canes and stuff, you know. And they ended up repealing that law. I mean, they did repeal it. So, you know, all is not lost here. I mean, you know, there is tremendous power. And the good news is, and I mean, I don't want to sound totally pessimistic. I'm sorry to listeners if I sound that way, because I don't really mean to. I mean, this is an awful moment, but it's not, you know, there is hope. That, you know, hopefully what will happen is this grassroots energy that's been there for the last 6 months, and it's really strong, and it is still happening. I mean, this isn't, it's not dissipating. All the people who are reporting on this are saying that there's more energy than ever in this. It is, it's growing, and it's getting more and more organized, and there's starting to be some funding for it. And, you know, this is the kind of thing that will make a difference. And I think that healthcare is the first big issue battle out there for these groups to focus on. And that's important. You know, you have to be, I mean, I think it's incredibly important to, you know, just resist Trump. I mean, that's, of course, that goes without saying. He's,
but it's,
you know,
not enough.
He's the worst of all possible worlds.
But it's not
but
enough.
No, and you need to have, And in this case, this isn't really a battle with Trump. This is a battle with the Republican Party. Mm-hmm. I mean, he'll sign, you know, they'll put a pen in his hand and he'll sign whatever they give him. But, you know, he's not driving this train. This is Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell and all of those Republicans who've been, you know, just salivating over the idea of getting this gigantic tax cut through. This is the Grover Norquist people. They've been around since the early 80s.
Yes.
You know, so this is an issue where people, you know, organizing around this issue, aside from obviously, you know, the just basic human necessity of ensuring that people like you and me, I mean, I don't have a pre-existing condition that I know of yet, but I am on Obamacare. This will affect me tremendously on a financial basis.
That's
I mean, looking at this plan, I'm going to be, even though I'm not sick yet, I'm old enough that the odds are getting, you know, pretty great that something's going to happen, and I will be in a situation, if this plan goes through the way it is, that my health care will be unaffordable.
Right.
So for me. Yep. So there, you know, I mean, I don't know how many of us know people, but anybody who's listening here knows two.
That's
Nicole
right.
and me.
And probably
who are
many
going
more.
To be dramatically affected.
That's right. I never wanted to be 65 so badly, because right now it doesn't touch Medicare, although they're coming after Medicare, aren't they?
Sure. Sure. And the thing is, I think one thing people have to realize is that this bill is so radical and so ill thought out. You know, because there is no good Republican free market fix for health care. You know what I mean? I mean, the best you can, Obamacare is the best
Republican
free market
exactly.
plan you could come up with. So the fact is that this is a very, very radical, risky thing to do to 1/6 of the American economy and this gigantic healthcare market. So everything I'm reading about it, and believe me, I'm no expert, and there are plenty of experts out there that people can turn to really look at the risks they're taking here with the market. But what they're doing is going to impact employer health care as well.
That's
people
right.
are going to see
yep.
their deductibles rise. They're going to see
yep.
their copays rise. They're going to see their contributions rise, because costs are going to suddenly hurtle out of control. And that's where Medicare comes in. They're also going to affect Medicare. And you know what will happen. The minute that happens and these costs go up and everybody starts, you know, the Republicans start looking at it, they're going to go about cutting Medicare too, because they want to. I mean, they're looking for an excuse, right? I mean, they hate
yep.
Medicare.
Yep.
So the entire market is going to be affected, and in many ways that I don't think, you know, this is, I mean, you know, Donald Trump came out and said, you know, being the brilliant genius that he is, he said, well, nobody knew how complicated health care was. Well, yeah, well,
we all did.
It's tremendously
yes.
complicated.
Yes. And there's a reason why it took so long. So, Digby, I got to tell you, even while, you know, today most of us are focused in on this health care or wealth care bill for the Republicans, there's so much else going on. By the way, Donald Trump admitted that he didn't tape anybody in the Oval Office. I didn't believe him before. I don't necessarily believe him now. I don't believe anything the man says. But, you know, we're so consumed. What I said before I brought you on is one thing that he said that's come true is all during the campaign, he's, your head will spin. Yeah, my head is spinning, and it doesn't ever stop, because we're constantly bombarded with one thing after another. And your article today up at Salon just made my head spin off its axis. You wrote, the headline is, never mind Trump and Russia, GOP still longs to investigate Obama, Hillary Clinton, and Loretta Lynch. Really, they won't ask what the ramifications are of, you know, Russia interfering in our elections to whatever degree they did, but they still want to go after Hillary Clinton and the fucking emails?
Yes, they do. And they're going to do it, by the way. I mean, that is actually going to happen. It's funny. I read this thing. Something came across my Twitter feed about the State Department launching a formal investigation into Hillary Clinton's emails, and I'm going, you know, are you kidding me? I mean, this is so I go and read it, and it turns out this is Rex Tillerson's, you know, State Department, which can't even staff itself,
right?
You know, with receptionists at this point.
Now,
you know,
he wants,
I mean,
to
it's
cut
completely
the budget.
Empty. They don't have anybody.
He doesn't want to fill those jobs. He wants to cut the budget and save the money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they're spending money on this, and they're going to launch a formal investigation into Hillary Clinton's email. So, okay, so the State Department's doing that. Then I realize that, you know, what also came down the pike was, you know, I don't know if you remember when James Comey testified the last time, he mentioned that he had had a beef with Loretta Lynch over using the word matter
instead of investigation,
matter versus investigation,
yep,
right?
Yep.
And that he thought that they should use the word investigation. Lynch said to use the word, well, apparently in right-wing media, this has completely turned the whole story on its head.
Oh,
it is a sign of obstruction of justice by Loretta Lynch, who was working hand in glove with Hillary Clinton to steal the election. Okay, take that. And then fast forward, Trey Gowdy, who is the new chairman of the House Oversight Committee,
right,
since Jason Chaffetz
right,
cut and ran.
Right.
So now it's Trey Gowdy, you know, big difference, right? So he went on Fox News last month and said that he also thought that there was collusion, and he used the word collusion, between Loretta Lynch and Hillary Clinton, and that he knew, but he couldn't say how he knew, that there was tons of evidence in there that would prove that point. Okay, so now that was before he became the head of the Oversight Committee. Now he's the head of the Oversight Committee. He has not said he's going to launch an investigation into this. However, he did say yesterday that he was going to pull way back on the Russia investigation because, you know, Special Prosecutor Robert Mueller came up to the Hill and said, you know, let's not cross our, you know, let's not cross swords on this. Mm-hmm. And you know, so be careful who you interview and whether you give. Basically, Mueller was saying, please don't give anybody immunity because I'm trying to build a case here. And so Gowdy kind of unctuously says, well, I don't want to interfere with the special prosecutor. Of course he does. Sure. But he goes up there and says, you know, so we're going to, you know, we only see, I don't think there's any reason to suspect collusion. We're going to worry about what the Obama administration did about the hacking, and we're going to look into the leaks. So that's going to be the focus of his, nothing about Trump, nothing
Amazing.
About any of that.
Amazing.
And what that does is, and the reason I kind of am meandering here to explain the background, is that it frees up oversight to then suddenly shift to this, you know, this absolutely urgent question of Loretta Lynch and Hillary Clinton, which is what Trey Gowdy wants to do. Coincidentally, Chuck Grassley, the head of the Senate Judiciary Committee, also announced that he was finally ready to look into the obstruction of justice charges, which fall under his oversight duties as the Judiciary Committee chairman. Because they didn't, because the White House didn't give him some documents in good time, and that always angers Chuck Grassley. I guess he just really gets upset when they don't give him his documents. He doesn't really care, but you know, you better treat him with kid gloves.
Yes.
If the White House was a little smarter, they'd know how to do that. But in the midst of that announcement, he also said that they're going to be looking into the Loretta Lynch, Hillary Clinton obstruction of justice
unbelievable
charges. So
unbelievable.
Yeah, so they're not going to look at Russia. They want to pull back and let the special prosecutor work in quiet and let him have his way. But they're going to have to do something about this other big problem. So my feeling is that they're going to put on a big show. We're going to see Hillary on the Hill. We'll see Bill on the Hill. We'll see Loretta Lynch on the Hill. We're going to see James Comey again. But, you know, I have a feeling we're going to see a real show here. If they can pull that off. Because they need to provide something for their people, right? I mean, their people are probably getting a little bored. So they need to have a show. So that would be my guess. And, I know we'll all sit there just with our head in our hands,
yes,
heads in our hands going, you've got to be kidding
Nothing
me.
Makes
but,
sense
yeah, and
anymore.
And I think the press will enjoy it too, by the way. I think the mainstream media is kind of ready for a little change of pace, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. Because they're getting stonewalled by the White House on all this. That'll be something the White House would want to talk to them about.
Absolutely. And it'll be a great show. They can really,
oh,
you
God.
Know, they can get into that too. So, yeah, I mean, I couldn't believe it when I saw it, but I thought, you know, why didn't I see that one coming?
We should have all seen it coming because it ain't over until they say it's over. Digby, we've only got
That's
a minute
right.
left, but Nancy Pelosi has taken a lot of heat over the last 24 hours for the losses in Georgia and South Carolina, more so for Georgia, I think. No one saw South Carolina as winnable. Howie and I have this talk a lot. He's on vacation for a couple of weeks. Is it time for Nancy Pelosi to go as leader of the House Dems?
Well, I think it's time for you know, there to be new leadership developed in,
yes,
in the Dems, but I'm sort of in, I think Howie and I may be in opposite sides on this. I don't know where he stands on this at the moment, but I think she's to stay till 2018.
Mm.
And the reason is because this period in here in trying to block Trump,
mm-hmm,
and what's happening and what's like going to, what I just described about what might happen in the House on the healthcare bill.
Right.
I think you need somebody who has got experience and knows how to handle things like that. I don't think it's a good time for somebody to have a learning curve.
Right.
I guess that's what I'm saying.
And not only that, there's nobody there. You know, who are we going to get? Steny Hoyer or Debbie Wasserman Schultz? And that's what I think that's Howie's point as well. And it's my fear.
Yeah, it is. They need to develop a new generation. I'm totally with everybody on that. Of course, she can't last forever, and she shouldn't. I mean, they're after 2018. I think it's there should be a total shift. Hopefully, because the Democrats have won the majority. But either way, it doesn't matter. You know, that's the time for a shift. I think right now, I think having a steadier hand, and she does seem to be respected by most of the Democratic caucus for her ability to do that thing. You know what I mean? To kind of keep everything together and to kind of focus and to have develop a strategy and keep the caucus in line. And I think that that's probably important. And I also think that this idea that somehow if you remove Pelosi, they won't be able to attack Democrats for being
nonsense.
San Francisco hippies.
Yeah.
Forget about it. They'll always find somebody.
They'll find another villain to go after. Oh, and one of them today called Bernie Sanders a violent Marxist. So, yeah, they'll
God's
yeah,
sake.
Exactly. Digby, it is always a pleasure. Yeah, I know. It's like just shake your head. Yeah, unbelievable. They live in another universe.
Unbelievable.
Heather Digby Parton.
No,
read her. Read Digby's blog. All you have to do is put Digby's blog into your browser. It'll get to Digby's Hollow Blue. And also at salon.com. Digby, it is always an honor to have you here. I so appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, Nicole. I enjoyed it.
Thank you. We'll talk again soon, I hope. And keep your head up. We got to stand strong.
Yep, you too.
All right. Thanks so much. Bye-bye. All right. We'll get through this. We got one more day in the week anyway. And tomorrow, I'm going to have to tape with him, but our friend Joel Silberman will be here. We've got a lot to talk about with Joel. I know he's always a favorite. He's a favorite of mine. I know he's a favorite of many of the listeners. He's got some health issues going on, so we'll commiserate and we'll try to save the world together. Thanks for listening. I'll see you tomorrow.
It's Thursday, June 22nd, 2017.
The primary control knob is the ocean waters and this environment that we live in.
The head of the U.S. Department of Energy goes full science denial. Trump administration seeks to reactivate Yucca Mountain nuclear waste site. Plastic pollution has now reached Antarctica. Renewable energy actually helps electric grid stability. Plus, British government to invest $1 billion in shift to electric cars.
All of those shifts, I see what you did there, and more straight ahead. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
There is a massive heat wave out west. Today, temperatures are expected to reach 127 degrees in Death Valley. But it's a dry death.
So there's that. This is your Green News Report.
I'm gonna soak up the sun.
Okay, Desi Doyen, Donald Trump has a great new idea that I am certain is going to make you be in favor of his border wall.
Not too fast. At a campaign rally in Cedar Rapids, Iowa on Wednesday, Donald Trump said he is toying with the idea of putting solar panels on his border wall at the U.S.-Mexico border.
We're thinking about building the wall as a solar wall, so it creates energy and pays for itself.
But I thought Mexico was going to pay for it.
And this way, Mexico will have to pay much less money.
Oh, I see. All right, well, that explains that. Is that good, Desi Doyen?
Well, it would be doable, but it would be actually cheaper and way simpler to just put solar panels where the people are.
Well, that's true. And if he really wants that much solar, nothing's stopping him from building the solar without the wall.
He really is the king of the trolls. It looks like CNBC is a go-to safe space for climate science deniers in the Trump administration. In an interview with CNBC's Joe Kernan, also a climate science denier, the U.S. Secretary of Energy Rick Perry, the guy responsible for the nation's nuclear plants and nuclear warheads, denied the basic physics that carbon dioxide is the primary driver of warming in the atmosphere.
You believe CO2 is the primary control knob
for the temperature of the Earth and for climate?
No, most likely the primary control knob is the ocean waters and the this environment that we live in.
Yes, it's the ocean waters and the environment we live in that is heating up the environment that we live in.
It was barely coherent. And just want to point out that the oceans are harmed by carbon dioxide emissions because warming waters seriously damage coral reefs, and the ocean itself is becoming more acidic as it absorbs some of our CO2 emissions. Perry also generated bipartisan anger from Nevada's congressional delegation when he said in a congressional hearing this week that the Trump administration intends to reverse the Obama administration's decision to shutter the controversial Yucca Mountain Nuclear Waste Repository located just 80 miles from Las Vegas. Nevada has no nuclear plants, and a majority of Nevadans object to being forced to bear the burden and the risk of other states' toxic radioactive nuclear waste in perpetuity. Renewable energy does not harm the reliability of the electric grid and, in fact, helps it. That's according to a new analysis published in advance of a soon-to-be-released Department of Energy study into whether wind and solar negatively impact grid reliability. That was ordered by Secretary Perry. Perry hinted that he might try to roll back state renewable energy targets using grid reliability as an issue of national security. But a new report from energy consulting firm The Analysis Group this week concludes that adding new renewable energy capacity to the U.S. electric grid actually increases the grid's reliability.
Or, as Rick Perry might say,
oops.
California Energy Commissioner David Hochschild said California's grid is managing the rise of renewables just fine. And he notes that the countries with the most wind and solar, Denmark and Germany, have 10 times fewer power outages than the U.S. Plastic pollution has made it to the Antarctic. Researchers from the British Antarctic Survey, who recently had to move their research station due to unstable melting ice, announced this week that they found surprisingly high levels of tiny plastic pollution, 5 times higher than they expected, in the Antarctic Ocean, brought in by ocean currents.
We really ruin everything, don't we?
But some good news. World coal production dropped by the largest amount ever in history last year and saw the largest rise in renewable energy generation. That's according to the annual BP World Energy Report. And China, for the first time, surpassed the U.S. to become the world's largest renewable energy producer. And Britain announced this week that it will invest nearly $1 billion in zero emissions technology, with a goal of requiring nearly all vehicles in Britain to be zero emission by 2050 and mandating the building out of an electric car charging infrastructure at gas stations and rest areas.
England's doing it. India's doing it. China's doing it. Maybe someday the U.S. will do it.
Maybe.
Leading the world from behind. For much more on all of those stories, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us, follow us, and share us worldwide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.